Hey, Nerd Funnelers, we're back. You're listening to Nerd Funnel, where we take all the nerd news of the world and
grab it by the pussy.
Trump style.
Jesus fucking Christ, Ivan.
And funnel it into your more than willing ear holes. I'm Bob Shway, and with me tonight is Mars.
What's up, Nerd Funnelers?
And we got Fong.
What's up, bitches?
And we got Ivan.
My eyes can't cry anymore.
And we have just completed
Can I tell people that you were crying?
No, that didn't happen. Just fucking keep that to yourself.
We have just completed our first viewing of Rogue One.
So good.
One of many. Shit.
Yeah, one of many to come, for sure. Like, this deserves repeat viewing.
Right now, I'm eating all my feelings away right now.
Yeah, you got emotional after that was done, and now you just feel like, you look like you're getting just satisfied and calming down.
No, this is what happened. I even had a couple drinks, and then he was talking about that I saw. And then he was talking about Rogue One like an ex-girlfriend that he really, really missed. Like, this movie, it's amazing. You don't understand.
It's like he was having nostalgia for a movie he just saw.
I'm gonna go drunk dial Rogue One right now.
That's oddly accurate. I wanna say that's inaccurate, but that's pretty much spot on. And, like, no fries from Five Guys is going to, like, assuage my hunger.
You're going to go home and listen to Coldplay?
I am going to go home and listen to Coldplay Fix You right now.
And stare at pictures of Rennick and caress it and just be like, oh, my God. I want to go back and see you.
Pictures of Cassian.
Of who?
Cassian.
Oh, yeah. That
Diego Luna?
Beautiful.
God, yeah. He looks good. He looks good.
Y mama tu tambien or whatever.
Yeah.
Y tu mama tambien.
Yeah, whatever.
Did we see? We saw his bare butt side or backside in that movie, didn't we?
I don't know. I've never seen.
Have you guys ever seen him in any other movie besides Rogue One? This is the first I've ever heard of him. I saw an interview with him about a few weeks ago in which he was talking about how Star Wars was a movie that really captured his imagination as a child, and he said that he was absolutely thrilled to be in a Star Wars movie, and he did an excellent job.
He did do a great job.
He was so good.
I was really interested in the in how I'm a fan of Felicity Jones. The very first movie I ever saw.
What else has she been in?
Well, that's one of the reasons I was really impressed with her, because she was in a movie in a love story called Like Crazy, and that film was made by Drake Doramus, in which she and Anton Yelchin were both in the movie, and
great actor. Also.
That entire movie was 2 hours in length, and it was a very, very low budget film, but it was very, very popular because. Well, I think the movie resonated, but not only that, it's like it really showcased the acting skills of these two incredible actors. Because the entire movie, there was no real script except for a general a skeletal outline, and they did the entire movie was almost all improv. And like, how good do you have to be to do improv and make it believable? And like so
you just have to be like super in that moment,
exactly. And like her ability to do so, like gave her a lot of credibility as an actor. And the So I was expecting a lot of things from her in Rogue One. I don't think she did as good as a job as, but like she definitely had the
a good a job as in the other movie.
Yeah, okay. But like I think they underutilized her. I think in most of the movie you could easily have substituted Diego Luna's character in as the main character, because I think he had more of a presence. But I think they could have done a better job.
I feel like you're right. He had more of a character arc.
Yeah, exactly.
I also like that they didn't just like shove in your face. Just these are the love interests. Like they're gonna make out now. They did have that slight.
They
moment.
Had eye contact, but it was never like, oh, well, I love you.
They
you
had a moment, out. But it wasn't like.
But
it
was
unspoken.
Like a split second.
Yeah.
What was beautifully done there was like it was suggested there was an emotional connection there, and like if they led into a kiss or something like that, I think that would have taken away from.
Yeah,
the
I'm so glad they didn't kiss.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad they didn't
Absolutely.
Kiss.
Uh-huh. You know what I really like about
his
character?
That's how people work, though. Like, the subtle, like, little nuanced moments that you have with people.
That's
where
really
you communicate that you have a connection.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
It was more about the eyes in that moment, is what you're talking about. And I absolutely 100% agree.
That's what was so beautiful about the movie, though, because, like, we were told.
That was the I love you, I know moment.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, good call.
Good call.
That's
good
exactly
call.
What those eyes said. And you can tell the strength of an actor by how emotive and communicative their eyes are.
Their body language.
Michael Keaton said that, and it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And in that moment, spoilers, when they're sitting on this beach looking into each other's eyes for the last time.
Yeah.
It speaks louder than... Speaks louder than...
Than episode 2 nonsense.
No, I was going to say episode 3. You're breaking my heart!
But it was just beautifully done because the... I mean, what really sold the movie for me... I mean, bottom line. Like, viewers, for any of you who haven't seen the movie, and for those of you who have, it's Star Wars meets Black Hawk Down, pretty
Ooh,
much.
Yes. Good call.
And yes. The you put the war in Star Wars, and like the whole...
There are so many real moments that there are stakes on the line.
Right.
Like, you feel the tension of, like, this could go absolutely wrong. Even though we know how episode 4 turns out, episode 4 feels like one of those, like, you're on a fucking tunnel of love ride. You know it's on a track.
Yeah.
Well, you're on more of a mystical quest because that's when the core of the Star Wars series comes into play. You're talking
right.
about the Jedi now, and
right.
but like the whole premise of Rogue One, we wanted to see ordinary people do incredible
extraordinary
things.
And
right. like
and this could have gone and. Every moment I was there, I was literally on the edge of my seat.
Right.
Because I was so concerned where this could go.
I was
literally, folks, he was on the edge of his seat. He was sitting right next to me.
Yeah.
He just kept leaning up. Right. It was amazing.
I saw that.
I would
saw
look
that.
Over every once in a while, and I would just see Ivan, like, biting his nails on the edge of his seat.
Well, you were, like... I think everyone was on the edge of their seat, especially like since, like Ivan said, the stakes were so high. But,
right.
but you know, you and the movie was based on ordinary people doing ordinary things, especially when we're talking about like a good versus evil, like light versus the dark side, especially when Lord Vader comes on the scene, which I'll mention later.
Yeah.
Well, everybody was like, I mean, everybody in Star Wars, like everybody's the hero or the heroine, like they're an
right.
icon, right? But
right.
these are just people that got like, okay, we got caught up in this war. We got to fight it to survive.
And we want a better life for ourselves in
yeah.
general. I want to take a moment and talk about that.
Okay.
Yes.
Diego Luna's introduction is so incredibly powerful.
Yes.
Incredibly powerful. We get a snitch on the Empire, calls him up, and he's just like, hey, you know, I heard about this thing. You got to get me out of here. I need to go right now. No, no, no. You're going to sit there, and you're going to fucking tell me what you have to say. And he literally holds this guy there. Captain whatever the fuck his name is. I don't even care. Just
Andor.
Captain Mexico is...
Wow.
Captain Mexico.
Whoa.
Well, is he... Like,
we had a very...
Juan apparently says that he's a huge star in Mexico, and like it's a huge, huge, huge
It's
deal.
A big thing.
And I'm like, I like the dude. He's so likable. But in this scene, they deconstruct that so incredibly well. They have a snitch where he just is like, I gotta go right now. And he says, no, I'm gonna sit you down. And you got to tell me what you're going to tell me. And then he tells him, and then they attract Imperial forces over, and he's just like, I can't make it out of here. I have a bum leg. You have to get me out of here. It's like, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And he shoots the dude in the back.
Yep.
And
yep.
this says so much to the character of who is in the Rebel Alliance. They're not saints.
Mm-hmm.
These are criminals. These are low-life scum. But... they have principles as to what they think the galaxy should be, and it should not be one of fear and control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also about survival, too. I mean...
Right.
Yes, and they are willing to do what needs to be done in order to get the mission done, and that's what this entire movie is about.
And that's what as the franchise progressed, what it lost when it started showing the moments. Like, remember in episode 4, Han shot first, right? That showed
right.
that he was... You know, like what kind of person he was before he even like talked very much, right?
Right? Yeah.
So of course, this guy shot first too. Diego Luna shot first, shot him in the back, right? Like it's just kind of this.
It's completely tasteless, and it leaves a terrible, awful taste in your mouth.
Mm-hmm. But you, I mean, you immediately understand, like he wasn't going to escape without, like, you know, with this guy intact.
Yeah.
The reality of what they're doing really. Is brought to the forefront when they're on the that Imperial prison planet, and he has the opportunity to kill Jin's father, but doesn't go about doing so. And like, but when they escape the planet, she goes up to him and says, "Like, you killed my father, and how can you claim to be moral or whatnot?" And he
yeah.
goes, "Look who's talking, bitch." the you know, you all of a sudden, like a short while ago, you weren't even caught up in this rebellion. I've been involved in this rebellion since I was six. I've had to do these things because we're fighting for a greater cause. What have you been doing?
And then she comes back just like, yeah. Well, you may not have killed my father, but those were Alliance bombs that did.
Right, but yeah. I think he had a rejoinder there too. Saying something along the lines of like, you know what, we had
this
to do what we got to do. This is war,
yeah.
And yeah. So you know, it definitely showcased how. I mean, the Rebel Alliance is out there for good cause. It is
right.
out there to destroy the Republic, but like
the Empire.
Restore the Republic.
Destroy.
Yeah. Restore the Republic, and but you know, bottom line is because they're in such a precarious place, you have to do go in the moral gray areas if you want to survive.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Like on the battlefield, all lines are blurred.
Right.
Well, this is,
and there are no Jedi to enforce justice. So,
if there were Jedi, would argue that there were on the battlefield. That's why we get Darth Revan and Darth Malak.
Well, speaking thematically, I will say it's the return of the anti-hero, and I love that.
Ooh.
Because, like, that's something I really liked about Firefly. That one scene with that 14-year-old kid getting attacked by Reavers, and then Captain Malcolm Reynolds just caps him in the dome and just takes him out of his misery because he's not going to make it out. And that's the choice he made, was to murder a child.
Oh, and what this movie does is it puts us in these positions as viewers too to make these hard calls, like because
exactly.
that's what brings you into the world. That's what brings you in. It's like, of course, like you know, if given the choice at the end, like of Return of the Jedi, do we kill the Emperor? Of course we do. Like it's the easy
right.
choices, right?
Exactly.
There's lots of these like black and white, good and bad, you know, Sith Jedi, you know, evil, good or evil choices, right? They're polar.
And you're only allowed to make those decisions if you sit in a position where you can see the macro, not the micro.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
the beauty
exactly.
of the Star Wars story is that we're allowed to we're given this microscope to see the micro workings of the Rebel Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, one of the reasons I brought up the idea that the idealistic universe that was, I'll say Episode 1 because Episode 2 is what kicked off the Clone Wars. That
uh-huh.
then you had the ability to be to stay on the more on the lighter sides of the Force, but like now since the Jedi are down and the Sith are ascendant, then what really defines right and wrong, the lines are really blurred there, because if you want justice to survive, you're gonna have to, the bottom line is you got to do things you don't want to do
just survive.
Yeah, survive.
But you notice how they balanced it out so well. Like how much good or how much bad is involved in creating a force for good, and
right.
how much good is involved in rounding out an evil force. Because Jin's father, you
right.
know, while he did create the Death Star, was able to sneak in the fatal reactor flaw.
Right.
Right. So, and then you have the defector. You had that pilot defector.
Yeah.
So there are these kind of veins both ways. It's like the gray area is widened a lot in this, where we have more room to play. And when we have that room to play, that's where the characterization can really flourish.
I right. love that you brought that up, because director, whatever the fuck his face is, white.
Gareth Edwards?
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
Krennic? Or...
Wow, you don't even remember the name of the director.
Not the director of the film.
Not
director Krennic.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Director Krennic.
Fucking
yeah.
Grand Admiral.
The Grand Admiral.
Grand Admiral South Africa. He's all like, this is something that always drew me to the TIE Fighter game. You remember
uh-huh.
that?
Oh, God, yes.
Barely, but go
Here's,
on.
He says something very simply. We are going to bring glory to our great empire. He's in it. This is good intentions for control and peace and across the galaxy and what he believes is the right cause.
Mm-hmm.
Blur those lines again. He believes the mission of the empire so much, and he sums it up by saying, we're going to bring peace and tranquility and order to our empire.
Well, the best villains don't know they're bad guys.
Exactly.
Right.
And so, yeah.
It made it so believable.
Well, especially since he was raised in, you know, a lot of these people, you know, what Palpatine's master stroke, his master plan, was creating an entire generation that was raised into believing that the Republic and the Jedi were corrupt.
Right.
And making them look bad. And so, you know, we're 30 years on from Empire, or from episode 3, after Order 66 for about
20 years.
20 years, yeah, right. Yeah. So there's now a generation that's been raised, you know, partially to believe like the Empire is good. They are bringing order because, you know, look at all the chaos we have with the Trade Federation and with the Republic, and now right. we've got this order.
And it's so cool that we also got to see that the Ursos flourished when they were a part of the Empire.
Yeah,
and
right.
once he turned away from it, they lived in destitution and poverty.
They were drinking. They were drinking that blue milk, yo.
Yeah, the blue milk made a comeback.
That's how you know they're fucking Outer Rim.
In the whole of the ground.
Who cares about them Outer Rim hood those, rats?
There's blue milk drinking Outer Rim jobbers.
I love the reference to the original trilogy. It looked like they were on some kind of farm. I don't think it was a moisture farm, but like, it was definitely reminiscent of Tatooine.
I'm sure they were just moisture farm, like moisture farming things.
I love the ties to the original movie. Where like you finally understand how a single fighter could destroy an entire battle station. I mean, in Episode 6, they didn't have that luxury because they had to destroy what was still under construction. But Episode 4, they're like, we need to find a weakness because if this thing goes online, we're fucked.
Oh, that's what we were all mentioning. Yep. Now, the ridiculous loophole that people have made fun of for decades and decades.
I like how they closed it.
There was a purpose for it now.
And it was that vein of goodness in what was otherwise considered to be evil. It was like, we built that fatal flaw into it. And it makes sense. And it beautifully closes it up. I really like that.
There's a very small weakness that only a Jedi could take advantage of, but it was, you know, it was.
But they made it.
Yeah, they made it.
They
yeah.
made that that weak point. And it's interesting to me because, like, I'm sorry, I lost my point.
Do you think that maybe because it seems like Jin's father, Jin's mother was Force sensitive or was tied to Force. She gave her the Kyber crystal and said, may the Force be with you.
But that I don't think it's that. I think we get a sense because now we're looking outside of the Jedi-centric narrative.
Mm-hmm.
We see that people refer to the Force and pray to it much like many of normal people will pray to God.
Yeah.
I also think that quartz crystal necklaces are just going to go through the roof now in terms of sales just for that scene.
Well, Donnie Yen would say all is as the Force wills it. Yeah. So we'll see.
Just like everyone got those like geode rings when
the Force is with us
in
I am
Game
one
of Thrones.
Force.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. You're right. So it's like there's another thing that came in is Kyber crystals are now canonized in a film.
Right.
Before it had just been in EU and it had been in
Clone Wars and Rebels. Clone Wars, which is canon.
Yeah.
We'll take that.
In the EU, they never referred to them as Kyber crystals. Back then, they were called like Ilum crystals or something like that. Dagon crystals or whatnot.
Because it was on planet Ilum, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty much the same thing. I think even in this new expanded universe, they still refer to them in a sideways fashion to Ilum because even in Rebels they brought in so much stuff in the expanded universe. You see Jedi holocrons, you see Sith holocrons, you see Onderon, and a nice touch was they finally canonized someone a long time ago, but they gave Saw Gerrera a character from the Clone Wars animated series
Live-action counterpart.
With a fantastic actor and big-name actor in Forrest Whitaker.
Was that a lost opportunity? I felt like there wasn't enough of him for him to...
I felt like there should have been more.
I don't think they did enough with him because,
For him to transmit her... There was a lot that was cut out of this movie, I noticed, from the trailer.
Uh-huh.
But enough for him to transmit his ideals and how he saw... the Empire as this malevolent, oppressive force. Mm-hmm. And we see how she's imprinted with that. I felt like that was a wasted opportunity.
I feel like it's... Because it seems... Okay, well, Saw Gerrera, he was... with Rebellion, then went totally fanatical, went too far for the Rebellion. Was that my understanding?
That's what Mon Mothma referred to, and I think that's going to be a theme that's going to be explored in Star Wars Rebels. I really think that's going
to
be the case.
And is that disillusionment with the Rebellion, was that something he was supposed to have passed on to Jin? Because he ditched her when he was 16, right?
I don't know if that...
He left her there.
Yeah. Right, yeah. yeah.
And so
that's something I wanted to hear more about.
She paid the price. Like you were saying, this shit's got to get done, right? Like with the Rebellion, this is about survival. Like it's not pretty. And she was on the receiving end of that. I think that's what made her disillusioned with it. And then she meets up with Diego Luna later, and she sees that in him, and she's been on the receiving end of being shafted for a greater cause, and she doesn't want any part of it.
Mm.
I think that's what... And I thought that maybe... I want to know more about what happened between her and Saul Guerrero. I think that maybe that was a scene that was cut. I'm not sure, like what that break was and her disillusionment, her just desire to get away from everything instead of being part of what her father was or what Saul Guerrero was. What was a part of
this movie works so goddamn well,
especially
because there is so much sacrifice going on. I don't want to like cheapen it, but it's sort of like cinematic shorthand. If you give up your life, you've made a huge sacrifice. And everybody gave to the cause. Yeah. And I believed it. I bought that shit like it was like an avocado sale on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. And like there is no substitution in character development than making an ultimate sacrifice for something that maybe something you didn't really believe in at first. But yeah, at the end, you just said, well, this is where I'm at now, and I'm going to give everything to it.
Yeah.
That's why at the end we felt so invested.
Yeah.
Because we felt the weight of their sacrifice. And it was essentially like, you know, the 9/11 effect of like, you know, all the first responders going in, like, and, you know, giving their lives to save people.
Yeah.
And we were immediately on board and we felt indebted to it, no matter how flawed what came afterwards was.
You know, what's hard for people who are ready to make that sacrifice,
yeah,
is that people that are like committed and ready to give up and then put in a situation where other people are sacrificed in their name. When Jin's father was confronted Rennick and said, like, oh, I'm the one that sent everything out. Yeah. Leave them out of it. And then immediately, what does he do? He shoots all of the engineers, even though they were innocent.
Typical Imperial.
Yeah, the great sacrifice in any...
Going full Imperial?
In any story is, like, the quickest and most, like, genuine way you can do character development.
Well, forcing that sacrifice on other people. So it's
like another great example is in, like, as you know, I love Uncharted. So Uncharted 2, when Paul Schaefer dies, I think that's his name, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
In Nathan Drake's arms.
What?
And he's like, I'm gonna do this mission, and you know, I think Elena's like, are you fucking sure? That sounds like crazy. He just said this shit turns you into a fucking alien or something and gives you superpowers. And he was just like, it was real to him, and that's enough for me.
Yeah.
One of the things I really enjoyed about the film was the reintroduction of old characters. Like, I loved how they did Grand Moff Tarkin. He was back. And he
so good.
Can we talk about the CGI Tarkin?
You couldn't tell it was CGI. It's like
I don't know what you're looking for.
I don't know if like, you know, who they did to do Tarkin, but like it definitely had that kind of malevolent presence that he not Lord Vader style, but like it was definitely that like very Hitler style malevolence that Peter Cushing brought to the character in episode 4.
Was that his voice? Just did a Peter Cushing impression?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was definitely not close enough for like really
to be spot on.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough
people like me who are fucking anoraks about everything.
There was enough rolling of the R's with your rebel friends soon enough.
Yes,
right? There was enough rolling of the R's.
He pulled off that one line beautifully. You may fire when ready.
You may fire when ready.
I got chills when I heard that
line. That
was like,
good.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, this is definitely episode 4.
Now, I was expecting just for him to appear in like holographic transmissions. I wasn't expecting a full-on recreation.
Right. Mm.
That was I was kind of pleasantly surprised they did that. But the only thing I worry about, though, is now in 10 years when we watch this film again, is that going to look dated? Is that going to look...
Of course it is.
And so
that's like going back to GoldenEye 007 and be like, oh, I played this. And meanwhile, like 20 years ago, you were like, this is the best thing ever. Look at fucking lifelike.
Look at those polygons.
But fuck you, because I still have so much fun playing that
game. Fun as fuck.
Yeah.
Frankly, that's true, because nobody knows how to fucking duplicate GoldenEye 007.
I used to be so good at it, and I don't know what happened.
Because you played fucking Odd Job, you dildo.
I didn't. Okay, this...
I bet you did. Call this shit out. You're a cheap-ass bastard.
I'm pretty sure I played James Bond, but, like, just short tangent. I played with my cousin who like had just like moved to the States from Vietnam, and so like the N64 was like the first console he'd ever had. He's never even seen a console before, and he was like, "Let's play GoldenEye." I was like, "All right." I proceed to fucking murder him at GoldenEye because I'm a bitch and I'm a shitty cousin.
And then
this is the first time he's held a controller.
How old is he?
And I don't know. I think he was like 12 or something.
Oh, you
and I was just like, bang, done.
Bitch,
and
then, bitch,
and he
cold.
Was just like, why do you keep murdering me? I don't know, because you suck. Get good. Like,
get good. And the best part of this story is that he comes back a day later and fucking beats the shit out
no,
of
that
you.
Never bitch,
that's cold. That is cold.
I just want to believe that.
He's in the military now, so he might be able to come back and just kick my ass.
It's like, you want to go some real life GoldenEye now?
Wow.
Then I'd be odd job.
Speaking of gunplay, how about those weapons and the all those new guns? Didn't Donnie Yen have that? Like, it was like a laser longbow.
He had like a bow.
Was it?
But it looked like a longbow.
Do you guys ever used to play any of the Dark Forces?
Yeah,
games?
Yeah.
Now, some of the weapons they brought out in the field. Like, I think I saw like one of them. I don't know Star Wars weapons, but I think one of them was like looked like a T-21 repeater from Dark Forces.
Like the one with the four barrels. I can't quite remember.
Yeah, and
I was thinking of Duke Nukem.
A lot of it like was reminiscent of Return of the Jedi, like the charges they were setting, like and when they were in the shield generator, they plant when they twist.
There was a lot of thermal detonator play.
Yeah.
They weren't thermal detonators, but they were charges.
The
but
thermal
the,
one is the sphere that she slides the.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Bausch does I'm that usually pretty good at minutiae. Can somebody tell me what the difference between a detonator and a thermal detonator is?
No idea. But the
we're going to leave that up to Nerd Funnel fact checkers to bring this up on Wikipedia.
Have we ever actually seen on screen a thermal detonator explode?
No.
Because I know you can use them in video games.
Uh-huh.
Right.
But I've never actually seen one used
like,
on screen.
In Dark Forces, there was essentially just a grenade.
Grenades, yeah. The war scenes in this movie, the only time we've really seen anything like this remotely like this was the Battle of Hoth in Episode 5.
Uh-huh.
And this
and
is the first
sort
time
of the Battle of Endor.
I was going to say, Ewoks, hello.
Yeah.
And One of them died. That was hard.
And now we see like for the first time in almost 20 plus years, we see they weren't AT-ATs, but they were ATCP. AT-ACP rockets, the heavier dutier kind.
Okay,
and they were the heavier dutier one.
Yeah, from what I read, like they're not AT-ATs per se.
I thought these
were ATACPs.
Like precursors, because in Rebels we have the prototypes for AT-ATs. Yeah.
I loved how they conducted the battle, because like on Hoth they didn't have the Rebel fleet with them; they had all these snow speeders and like none of their weapons would. They had to use tow cable to take them down. But now they actually have elements of the Rebel fleet, and so you see much more of a full blown war. So when he's
that was a great battle scene, and this is why it works. I feel like we finally get an accurate feeling of the actual military strength of the Empire, and conversely also the relative military strength of the Rebel Alliance, I feel like wasn't truly accurately depicted in the Battle of Endor, which is, to be fair, the only time before this that they attempted like a space battle. I would argue that the trench run on Death Star 1 doesn't really...
Well, that was only fighters. They didn't have any... There was no capital ships until Return of the Jedi.
Right. And you get a better idea of the interplay between cap ship, fighters, and everything else.
We didn't even see the Rebel fleet until the end of Empire Strikes Back at the very end when they fly out to join it.
Right.
Right.
So,
and those are only small elements of the fleet, because like I think like one of the things I like about this new expanded universe is the old expanded universe, you kind of get the feeling that the Rebel Alliance fleet is completely overmatched by the Empire, and like
and
you still have that feeling here, but like in the new expanded universe,
in the Battle of Endor, that's the entire Rebel fleet.
Right, but in the new expanded universe, I kind of get this feeling that like while they are still not as strong as the Imperial Navy, you get the impression that, at least I got, that they're actually a little bit stronger than we made them out to be, because you finally see the Mon Cal cruiser at the end of the film. You see this
and they were converting those from like luxury ships, right? Right. They were militarizing pre-built
and
gigantic
transport
ships.
I had always
ships.
Understood that those weren't ready until around after Empire.
They started building them up at, like before Yavin, because like, Bobby and I did a podcast on Rebels a while back, and like the bottom line, if you do not have those Mon Cal cruisers, you don't have a rebellion, because
that's
like,
true.
They're the big daddies.
And, yeah, because you need something to challenge the Star Destroyer, and they right. trashed two of them in this film, which which was beautiful, because at the opening crawl for Episode 4, is like Rebel spaceships had won their first major victory, and destroying two Star Destroyers, two major captures.
Was that the victory?
That was the victory. Been, yeah, that's yeah. totally
Holy
the victory.
Holy crap,
yeah.
That was the victory.
That was the victory. They destroyed two major Imperial capital ships.
Wow. And, you know, you bring up another great point, because we get to see the inner workings of the Rebel Alliance for the very first time.
Yep.
Like the actual politics that goes in behind
it. Is not a unanimous group.
It is not. Right. They're not together. And the prior to Drain Erso going rogue, one. prior to that, the Rebel Alliance is on the brink of collapse. And that's amazing to me. That no one is just like, all of them were just like, I'm ready. They're ready to throw the towel in.
Right.
Let's fucking cash in while we're ahead, while we still have our lives. And she's just like, no, fuck that. We're going to go, and we're going to go fucking, we're going to strike hard. We're going to get this done. And then maybe we have a fucking chance.
And wow. That's another way where it leads in beautifully to the original trilogy, because they won their first major battle. They destroyed. They defeated a major Imperial fleet, and they and it leads up to the Battle of Yavin, where they destroy the Death Star. And if that doesn't bring people hope, I don't know what does.
Right. And it's like they get so much momentum after that,
and they're like, dude, we got a chance now. And then it just ties in beautifully, because like then you lead into Empire Strikes Back, where they lose their main base on Hoth, which was considered a major setback and defeat.
Right.
And then it's like they're building a second Death Star. Okay, Return of the Jedi. The Emperor is there. If they get this thing online, there's no more weakness. It's end all be all. Just send the entire Rebel fleet our decisive battle is right here.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it, which Rogue One just dude. I never saw the original trilogy after I saw the prequels, but after I see Rogue One, I want to go back and watch it
now.
Yeah. And Rogue One just adds that sense of that an interesting new dynamic
that,
to the whole
that urgency.
Original series. Yeah. Not just the urgency, but it gives you more of a feel of how like what
scope.
It's the scope, the emotion that was driving the yes. alliance. Like, you know, they're about to separate, but like no. We finally go back to it. We destroy a major Imperial Starfleet with just a Mon Calamari cruiser, a few Nebulon frigates, and then we destroy the Death Star.
They lose most of their fleet in that battle. That part amazes me, because at this point they're just like, we'll take any victory that we can get.
Right.
And that's how you can know that like the opening crawl from Episode 4 is coming from a technically unreliable narrator.
Right.
Because this is a major victory to them, and that means that they've had zero luck prior to this. They are literally on their heels.
Right.
Like fucking fighting
backwards.
And
I will say, I loved like even just the first 5 seconds of the movie, they did not do John Williams. They did not do the iconic John Williams.
And they didn't do a crawl either.
Yeah, they didn't do a crawl. And it already set the tone of this is Star Wars, but also not Star Wars.
I have an opinion about the score, but we'll come back to that.
Okay.
They
kept like cinematically, the opening was very similar, because I mean, aside from no crawl, you had the establishing shot of like a planet.
Right.
Right. And then the scroll up or down.
Yeah.
And then something looming and imposing scrolling above or below.
Starship.
Of course, this time it was the rings and then the little tiny ship flying over. So immediately we get a sense of like, okay, because it was the Rebel U-wing, and so immediately we get a sense of like, okay, it's
I think it was the like an Imperial shuttle.
Was it the Rennick shuttle?
Yeah,
yeah.
It was the Rennick shuttle? Okay, so it was just immediately we have like the scope of what we're dealing with as far as like cinematography. Like that, this is going to be the same but different. And I was really hyped about that. Just in the first few minutes, it's like, okay, well, look, we've got the established stuff, but look, no crawl.
Yeah.
That's different. But we've got very structurally similar elements.
And then if you look at the themes, like, they did a really great, and this is the mark of great sci-fi, where it felt so real and so gritty in this, like, fantasy environment.
Yeah.
And, like, you got a sense that these were real people making real tough decisions.
Well, the fantastical elements
there
of Star Wars.
There were real stakes.
They were real stakes, and they were grounded in the decisions that they had to make facing you know, consequences that either way are going to be kind of bad.
Right.
This is the most real-feeling Star Wars movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because other ones are... This is more...
The other ones were more kind
fantasy.
Of... Fantasy. Yeah, fantastical.
This is more science fiction.
Well, the whole thing, going back to the whole thing that they said about the Jedi, now that because there are no Jedi now, they're forced back into the real scary universe where, like, you know, they had to fight for themselves, so they pulled back from the mystical aspects of the Force and the Force is used mostly as a rallying cry.
I love how they never discount the Jedi though.
Right.
They don't discount them because everybody has heard a tale of the Jedi.
Right.
Everybody knows that at one point in time they were real.
Yeah.
And they don't take away from that.
Well,
it makes the brilliance of this movie, it brings you down from, you know, walking with giants to looking up to giants.
And Donnie Yen was for not being a fucking Jedi.
Yes, sir.
By just believing in the Force.
And he didn't actually, like, do a Force jump or a Force push or anything. He just believed it and, like, augmented his senses. He was blind.
Yeah.
But it was just, like, it was very subtle. Like you said, like, not being a giant, not doing freaking Yoda flips. Like, day in and day out, but just subtle confidence.
And the beauty of
that. Faith of your own strength.
And that makes it more real.
Yes.
So much more real.
The subtle humor was awesome, too, because they threw a bag over his head and said, "Are you kidding? I'm blind." That was hilarious.
That was good. He had some good lines.
But as a viewer.
He was one of my favorites in that whole movie. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. Because, like, I think he brought so much mirth and, like, this. The importance.
What?
Go ahead. No,
just finally, like, a likable Asian protagonist.
Yeah,
like
three,
in the forefront.
I feel like 3 out of 4 at this table will agree that we're sore need of more, like, strong Asian leads.
He got what, third billing?
He got fourth billing behind Alan Tudyk. But
yeah,
I will take that.
Yeah,
that's pretty
I
good.
Will take that.
Well, what makes his use of the Force or his relationship with the Force is it makes it feel achievable. Like, we can connect to that as viewers because it's in our wheelhouse to be as good as he can be. Like, we look up to Luke Skywalker because he can do all these things. We look up to, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi because he
I think he bridges the gap because...
Yeah, it's connectable.
He bridges the gap between us and Jedi.
Mm.
And the idea is that,
right.
is that I wholeheartedly subscribe to the idea that everyone is Force sensitive in that universe, but some people just happen to have a predisposition towards it. Not to say that you can't work towards that.
Yeah.
And I don't believe for a second that, and I see you, Mars, over there.
I know, he's ready to jump on.
Ready,
I see him.
You're ready. You're ready to jump in. This, that someone take, for example, the Donnie Yen character, Chirrut Imwe. He's the only one I really... he's the only character's name I learned. Chirrut Imwe. Like, I don't see him not being able to make the leap to become a Jedi. Right.
No, very possible.
Because he has a very strong connection to the Force. He may not see it the same way that a Jedi who is raised from birth to become a Jedi Knight...
Or at all because he's blind.
Or, well...
Sorry.
Do not be fooled by the things that you
see with your eyes. No, he probably sees better than...
Oh my god!
Different ways.
He's Force Daredevil!
He's Force
I mean, your eyes deceive, right?
Yeah. Well, now, since we're all talking about the Force, why don't we start delving into the dark side of things? What did you guys think of Lord Darth Vader?
Oh my god,
brother.
He was terrifying.
He was
We sorely missed a terrifying Darth Vader.
They made him
scarier than the original, than he was in any
movie.
Far.
Yeah.
Like, you always saw, like, everyone's scared of this fucker.
Yeah.
But why? Yeah. And then you saw, that's what happens when he's mad.
He fucks people up.
And it was nice. They paced it. So we got his you know what was really amazing?
Yeah, we got that old boy one shot fucking Vader scene.
The first thing that we see him as, it's at his weakest. He's in a back to tank.
Right.
Yes, and Mustafar.
And naked.
Yeah.
And so it's like we see him at his weakest, and it progresses him. Then he comes out and he talks to Rennick.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rennick is obviously afraid of him.
Right.
And like, and you, this whole time we've been seeing, they kind of layered how fearful we should be of Vader through the film. Because like, the first scene of the movie is Rennick being imposing and imposing his will on Jyn's father and her family and being terrifying and being the Imperial dick, right? And then he, you know, commands the respect and fear of all his subordinates. Then he goes to Tarkin. Then he and Tarkin kind of have this kind of antagonistic relationship.
Yeah.
He's totally flippant to Tarkin, and I loved that. Yeah, I kind of loved it.
Arrogant hubris, but then
because
he...
this is the interplay of politics between officers. Mm. This is how they show that. But at the end of the day, he knows everybody reports to somebody's boss,
yep.
And that everybody's boss is at right now is the Emperor and fucking Darth Vader.
Yep.
The Sith Lord.
And then he says to him, "He's like, am I still in command?" And that's when we see Vader finally slip from. You know, from going from his showing his weakest
conciliatory.
Side and his, you know, yeah, conciliatory to, okay, now don't
By the
fuck
way,
with me.
Yeah.
Don't
remember
forget
who's
in charge.
Yeah, right?
The that scene I thought was incredibly well done because, spoiler, at the end of the movie where you see Vader go to town on all those rebel troopers and you see him use force powers and that and just annihilate everybody.
Yeah.
Easily.
But the thing
easily.
Is, in my opinion... That's one of the reasons I liked that scene when he was talking to Krennic was that he was powerful at the end of the film, but when you see him in his interplay with Krennic, that scene I thought he was actually scarier doing that and
yes.
the way it was acted out, the way mm-hmm. the way he just put his presence
you know
out
why?
There.
Cuz Krennic was nothing to him.
Nothing. Yeah, exactly.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And even, I would argue, in the same way, like, maybe it looks a little more exciting. They made it more look exciting. But him killing all those rebel soldiers was nothing to him. And they were giving everything they had.
And that's another the tie into the original trilogy that I really like. Because, like, I mean, you also get another idea. Like, why is it so important that Luke be trained as a Jedi to take him on? Well, because, like, well, you see him... take on a normal Jedi Knight in Rebels, and he just toys with Kanan, like only Ahsoka can give him a workout, and then you see Vader like step on in, and like you get an idea of just how terrifying he is. Like he mm-hmm. he sucks the weapons out of the hands with the Force. He cuts them, and he just like goes. He's not even trying.
Right. You know, I got out of that scene. He had. Yeah. He was having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I got out of that
no,
scene.
No one, he didn't have to take anyone seriously there.
Yeah.
And then like you from Rebels and from Rogue One to Episode 4, you understand why they need a Skywalker to take him on because
right.
there's really no one on that power level that can take on someone like Vader who is a Skywalker, a weakened one because of his injuries, but nonetheless
right.
you need a Skywalker level Jedi to take him on.
Right.
And I think what they did really well, why we like the scenes with Rennick and Vader, is because like we were saying how it's belief like on the Donnie Yen side where it was the belief in the Force and the kind of not the more subtle machinations of the Force working through somebody than the actual display of power
right.
that made it work, that made that character believable. It's the same thing on Vader's side. Like I think, like we said, he's more terrifying when he's with Rennick is because it's the belief in the like you know it's that Rennick knows it's that fear that he feels, which is more terrifying than anything he could actually do. It's like the what could he do?
And you know, you bring up a good point because that's why Episode 4 is so fantastic. Because there are very, very, very limited displays of the Force at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like you hear about this thing and legend is so much more powerful than actual practice.
Mm-hmm.
And because there was just so much of it in the prequels, when we see it, okay, let's pretend it's 1977.
Yeah.
We roll in May, right? We're this thing called the Star War. Okay? And we roll up and we see like, oh, this thing, this mystical force that binds the universe and pulls it together, even though that was in Empire, whatever. Give me another 3 years into 1980. Anyways, so like, and then we get to the scene where like we're supposed to fear this dude, and all of a sudden we're in this meeting room with a bunch of like stuffy British people, and he's all like, "You're a fucking dick. Eat my shorts." And then this dude is just like, holds his fucking his hand up, and all of a sudden this guy's choking to death.
If I don't take it, your lack of faith disturbing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's all we see of the Force in that movie.
And he says it right there, faith, right? He says, you don't believe. And right. the belief is what makes it real to the viewers and to the character.
I've always felt like, you know, the Force was like basically that universe's religion.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it is. That's why they're just like, the Force be with you.
Exactly.
And also with you.
They don't actually say that. But amazing that would.
That's what I always thought in church. I was like, I'm going
a
to
long
hell.
Time ago in a Catholicism long, far away.
John Williams starts playing in your church.
On the organ, John Williams. Church organ, but, John Williams.
Yeah, like the way that, you know, that universe like conducted themselves, talked about the Force and stuff, it had really strong religious connotations. I actually wrote a research paper on this.
Oh, that's awesome.
I feel like we should post this on nerdfunnel.com.
Yeah. I don't know if I still have it, but like my professor actually came up to me and was like, this idea you have, like, you need to, like, if you go do your doctorate, please write your thesis on this. And it was
a fucking nerd your nerd. Professor
well,
is.
Well, basically because I was juxtaposing the religious aspects of the Force in Star Wars and then how, like, Joss Whedon has, like, no religion in Firefly.
One of the
I see.
One of the things I like to do in my spare time is study philosophy. And Bobby, you give me a great book, The Batman and Philosophy.
Oh yeah, it's good.
Oh,
and,
they have these.
I wasn't sure what to think about those things, but I actually think there's a lot of value to them because science fiction, fantasy. These kinds of stories are always interplayed with some kind of philosophical lesson or implications that like make it very, very fun and interesting it makes for a very, very fun and interesting angle to explore philosophy from. And you know, after reading that Batman book, I'm tempted to buy a book on Star Wars and philosophy to see like what.
Oh, they're out there aplenty, man.
I've got one
for you.
But those are really, really interesting because they tie some of these lessons into like research and epistemological thought process of philosophers from a long time ago, from Greek philosophy to 17th century philosophers and whatnot. And like, I'd be very interested in seeing what they would have to say about Rogue One and Star Wars and see, what are some of the deeper philosophical concepts that are seen in this movie when you see ordinary people and not Jedi in action.
They'd say war is hell.
War never changes.
And you and
get out of here.
And Ivan, you and I were talking about this
war
in the car.
Has changed.
But I am about to get my bachelor's in 5 months after 10 years of working towards it.
Yay, yay.
Solely, I want to say in large part to Iron Man.
Nice.
And this is why I was like super depressed at one point. And I was reading the back of the summary of Industrial Revolution in a Borders when we had those still. And, I just started thinking about it. And it was just like, you know, Tony Stark, he's bankrupt like every other week because his company's shutting down. He's a massive disappointment to his father. And he's always trying to, you know, run away from Hydra and what was the
alcoholism?
Yeah, and the alcoholism, and he is constantly internationally humiliated because he's like a big figure. He's
dysfunctional personal
figure.
Relationships.
Exactly. And you know, I had my stint of being like massively humiliated on television, and I had like no money and junk, and my father fucking hates me. And it was just like, you know, we identify in those three things, and if he can, like, try to maintain a multi-billion dollar company, I can get my bachelor's.
Yeah.
I can do that.
You
that
can
seems
handle that
doable
stuff.
Now. So, you know, say what you will about, like, fictitious IPs, but there's a lot of truth to them philosophically, I feel.
Oh, definitely. And I think we feel that more in this movie than I think the majority of the others. I mean, I got no philosophical reward out of like Phantom Menace.
Uh-huh. Right.
Well, no, yeah. that movie was crap.
We don't talk too much about the prequels because the actual value
for some
of those
people, the prequels don't even exist.
Right.
Yeah, and understandably so. Rogue One was a better prequel than 1 through 3.
Amen.
In light of what we said about not being beaten over the head with the Force and having characters make difficult decisions, how do you think this compares to Force Awakens from last year?
Better.
Yeah,
way better.
I liked Episode 7, but Rogue One blew it away.
Yeah.
One Force Awakens was, it was a decent Star Wars movie. It was good. But it was good because it held on to some of the things that have made the Star Wars franchise successful.
Well,
which
it was everything. It was just a rehash of everything that
the fucking plot point.
Right.
It was carrying the weight of its predecessors. It just kind of fell right into the footsteps of it.
Right, and it had this whole thing. It had the campiness and then the fantasy and stuff. But this felt grittier and more real and more relatable.
No scary villains in Force Awakens, I'm sorry to say.
That's true.
Kylo Ren doesn't.
Kylo Ren did not scare
me.
Can't
even fucking remember his name.
Yeah, exactly, right?
That's how fucking rememberable.
But the thing is,
rememberable.
They needed some way to restart the series. Episode 7 did decently in that area, but like right now, I'm very interested in seeing where they're going to go with Episode 8 because that's when they start going off in unknown territory. And.
Hopefully.
But like, you know,
they're still tied to the Skywalker line though. See, that's what I'm more excited about Rogue One. It's like, now they can go anywhere. Now we can jump ahead.
Star Wars was always about the Star Wars Skywalker line.
Well, it is, but like with these standalones now, we got the Han Solo standalone movie coming up. They can go anywhere.
Care.
They can do anything.
No, I don't care about that. I want unknown stories like this. Yeah. I want more of Rogue One Rogue One made work.
You and I were talking earlier about like, you know, I wanted to see, we were talking about wanting to see a Jedi-centric story. And like, I think there's definitely a lot of room for that because I think what's going to happen after Episode 7, we're going to see a gradual rebuilding of the Jedi. And now there's a major opportunity here, I feel, for more Jedi, not Skywalker centric, but Jedi centric stories that can lead into that can lead into some fairly epic storylines in which
Tales of the Old Republic, anyone?
Or Tales of the New Republic, where like they need to rebuild the Order. Order is what allowed for the Old Republic.
But as long as they allow that what we were talking about, what's successful about this film is the kind of mythicism around the Jedi, and the conflict and kind of disharmony that's going into creating something good, right?
Right.
So hopefully they could play those angles into creating a new Jedi Order, like. Obviously, there was some problems starting out already because Luke bailed and, you know, things went kind of south.
Yeah.
As far as rebuilding when he started off. So we already have some conflict there, but I would like to see...
Kylo Cunt.
I would like to see some of the lessons they learned about how making this film go into Episode 8. But we're getting... who is it? Rian Johnson is going to be...
Rian Johnson.
I call him Rian, too.
Rian. And he was actually on the... I saw in the credits, he was the special thanks, like, a consultant. So they are working together as a creative unit to kind of tie these things together in some way.
I certainly hope so.
The I want to...
He's a fucking delectable writer. I'm just going to throw that in.
I want to see like how... This is going to tie in. Like, Star Wars Rebels is on hiatus right now. And they're, what, right now they're 2 years away from Episode 4. So, like, they can definitely be some Rogue One tie-ins. I think Saw Gerrera is definitely going to be
You said you saw the ghost on the Rebel landing platform.
They showed the front of the ghost. Or a similar freighter, and I think a ship similar to it was definitely at the battle of the final battle at the end.
They did like give special thanks to Dave Filoni.
Yeah, they did, and if you're during a scene on Yavin Base, they actually call out with a loudspeaker like General Syndulla, please report. And who do you think which General Syndulla it is? It's got to be Hera.
Yeah.
Really?
It has to be.
I don't even remember their names. I like Rebels too.
Since they're going right into Episode 4, we don't at this stage in the game, we don't even know where Ezra and Kanan are.
Dead and buried.
Possibly.
Sorry. Spoiler, they're dead and buried. I'm just kidding.
And we got to see where... I'm really excited to see where they're going to go with Rebels after this because I've said this over and over again. I want to see a Mon Calamari-centric storyline. I want to see them get...
There was a lot of Mon Cals in this one. Who can be white, I learned.
Why they got to be orange?
Star Wars nerds know that, like, you know, they play a huge part in the Rebel Alliance, like I was saying earlier, because you need those cruisers in the fleet,
and you need their manpower behind the. I vaguely remember reading once that non-Mon Cals could operate their cruisers,
but not well. Well, they can't, because like the way their eyes were compared to like human or other human
right.
species. Yeah.
So like you don't have a navy without Mon Calamari.
Right. And like.
Well, and the cool thing was about the Mon Cal ships is they built them underwater, so the Empire had a hard time seeing where they were building the ships, because they were amphibious. They could go underwater too.
They used to be pleasure cruisers, but they retrofitted them to major warships, and like you know they're good when they're second only to the Imperial Star Destroyers.
Yeah,
and let's be fair, only a squid can be so pleasureful.
A lot of tentacles.
Thanks for spelling out the punchline.
It's going to be really interesting to see where they go with Rebels once they come back online. I'm pretty sure they're going to tie it in with Saw, but like, please, if Dave Filoni is listening to this, please do a Mon Calamari storyline.
Saw?
Saw Gerrera.
Oh, I thought it was Saw. Gerrera's character. Sorry.
I heard Saw like the fucking horror
torture
franchise?
Porn.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. It was like, they're going to bring in Jigsaw?
What'd you guys think about the different?
He works for the Empire.
Yeah,
let's play a game. I can't do it. Tobin Bell's voice.
Play a little game.
Vader tries to force choke him. I'm a puppet, you idiot.
What'd you guys think about the world? All these different planets they visit. They did a lot.
Would you rather get your hand cut off by a lightsaber
or choked by an invisible hand?
I'm horny. I just want to know. There's no stakes here.
They're both be fun.
Just tell me. What were you saying?
Oh, I was asking what you guys thought of all the different planets they visited. They did a lot of different planet traveling.
We got different.
Like all different terrain. We got desert. We got beach. We got
Yavin 4. We see Yavin on base.
We got the temples.
Yeah. Here I have a
that
problem.
Was interesting.
We got rainy rock planet.
I've got a problem with those kind of things. Whole entire planets, meaning they can have different ecosystems on one planet. Yeah. I've just always had a problem with that in any sci-fi.
That's a good point.
Property, because like, this is a really diverse planet that we live on.
Yeah,
I would imagine just by the numbers, we could probably have more that are. There are probably ones that are like super diverse out there. How do you even like conceive Coruscant as a planet wide city?
Well, given the way our Earth is looking, it's not inconceivable that like we're going to look at like Earth, assuming we survive in the next 100 years, our planet is going to look like Coruscant. I think it kind of sort of does it in space at night. Or I can't confirm that, but
on the night side, it's pretty lit up.
But I think it also depends on billions of people living in one
gigantic city planet.
One urban spire.
I'm going to take a picture of you right now because you have a buffant.
Oh my god, you got a flock of seagulls thing going there.
How's that different from what I normally have?
You have a snooky bump on your head.
You can find that on our Instagram.com/nerdfunnel.
Yep.
It's super high.
It'll go on at some point.
But like, okay, I guess it has to do with like planetary position too, because like, some planets may be set further away from the sun, and
they well,
might be all icy like Hoth, or they might be closer, and might be all deserty, or have two suns like Tatooine. Like,
right?
I mean, I
or
guess
they all must have blue milk.
I know. Yeah, blue milk.
Where do you think the blue milk comes from?
Blue cows? I don't know.
There you go. Does the body good? Does the body blue?
Blue.
I know Alderaan is pretty. Has a pretty well-balanced ecosystem.
Well, theirs is just like, we're the Swiss Alps everywhere.
You don't really see Alderaan in any of these movies.
That's true. I'm taking that from like Republic.
You see it at the very end of 3.
Yeah, but you don't
he
really
flies
see
in.
It. You don't really see it. See it.
Didn't you feel
like
bad for Jimmy Smits because you know what's coming? You know what's coming. He's like, I gotta get back. And I'm like, man.
It's NYPD Blue all over again. You know he's dying. He's going
like,
to die.
Dude.
He doesn't even get blown up by the Death Star. He just like gets taken by cancer.
Oh, that's terrible.
That was a deep cut, right?
Dies in hyperspace on the way there.
The nod to episode 4 was pretty nice, though, because they were like, they pretty much decided like we're not going to go for the Death Star plans. We're just going to like start really gearing up. And they says, I'm going back to Alderaan. We're going to ready our plan
for
war.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we need your friend. And it's like, he's a Jedi. And it's like, and you know shit's going to go down when they say, like, okay, now we got to bring fucking Obi-Wan Kenobi, Jedi Master, and Jedi Council member.
Yeah. Right. They have to still send for Obi-Wan.
The dude who beat Vader.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Swallow that.
He said he went back to go get his planet ready for war or something like that. But didn't Leia say in episode 4, like, oh, we're peaceful, we don't have any weapons, please leave us alone?
But that's kind of like
I think that was like a bluff or something.
I don't think it's necessarily a bluff, but it kind of says, like, okay, you know, we're a peace loving world, but, like, you know, we got to throw our principles away right now. Well, not throw our principles. We got to set that aside right now because a greater good requires that we move away from peace, and we have to move for war. For
We got to hurry up and put some bows and arrows together because these motherfuckers are coming.
We'll take on the Empire.
Yeah.
Then we know what happens to Alderaan in episode 4.
We do.
What happens?
You're kidding, right?
What?
Are you familiar with asteroid fields? It becomes one.
What?
Yeah. It's
disintegrate?
It's almost like millions of voices cried out at once and then were suddenly silenced.
Have you, by the way.
Only one thing could silence them. Bieber fever.
Have you seen that some these guys in a frat, their friend had never seen any of the Star Wars movies?
Get out of here.
So then they had him watch the original trilogy, and when he got to the part where they reveal who Luke's father is, he went, what? Like, he had gone somehow his entire life, one, never seeing these movies, and two, never hearing Luke's father.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Is this for real?
Yeah, like, you can look it up right now. And he's, like, losing his goddamn mind.
That's
like,
I want that.
Part of living in America is, like, you know, by the age 6, right?
Yeah, like, I don't know how the fuck this guy avoided it.
How is that possible?
I would give just about anything to not know that. To not know.
And have it be a surprise for you.
To be able to experience that for the first time. And also.
Let me ask you.
And also, like, watching the Doctor regenerate for the first time.
Oh,
like,
that would be
what?
Good.
This is. What? You can be another person?
Don't you wish you had, like, a Men in Black neuralizer and you could just isolate those memories and just, like, and then have someone show you?
How can he be your father? He's black and you're white.
Have you guys ever, like, talked to someone from that time period, like, who was seeing Star Wars for the first time, who, when they actually saw Empire, they were actually like, what the fuck? And then, I remember when they're doing interviews a while back, like, they finally gave James Earl Jones the script, and, like, it's on YouTube somewhere, where James Earl Jones reading the script is like, Darth Vader is Luke's father, and James Earl Jones was like, no, what's this? And even he was surprised. They kept it a secret for so long, even from the cast.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, and then that's one of the bet. Like, we were talking about, like, the rock in a hard place kind of no win scenario decisions. It's like, you know, that they set up, they made the original trilogy great. Is that, like, either Luke kills his father or the dark side wins.
Right.
Like, you have one choice or the other. I mean, in the end, of course, the Emperor is kind of the one that finishes the job, but. But still, I mean, there's no good way out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
So now we're up for the Han Solo movies, and, like, rumor has it they might even do a series on Obi-Wan.
Oh, that'd be really cool.
Please let Ewan McGregor come back.
I would pay to watch. He says he's good to do it. And
he's so good.
George is into the driver's seat. I'm okay.
He's good to do me, man.
I think he can do a good Obi-Wan. Yeah. But, like, because of the way the prequels were designed, I don't think we really saw the full scope of what he could really do as Obi-Wan.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there was a bunch of you know, things that he did in between those films that we didn't see, like, and, you know, Clone Wars kind of fleshed some of those out, but
right.
But yeah, there's a lot of room for him.
I don't want that, though. I want these.
You want the new guys.
I want these unknown characters. I want these unknown stories. I want tales from Star Wars.
I want new Diego. I want new Diego Lunas. That I like. I want new.
Where we learn about fucking Benjamin Skywalker. Yeah. Or whatever the fuck. But, like, these, like, non-canon stories where we somehow the Millennium Falcon crash lands on Earth, and then Indiana Jones finds, Millennium Falcon and thinks that Chewbacca is Bigfoot.
Yeah.
That's
wow.
No, that's a story. What is that from? Tales from Star Wars
and
or
then,
some shit like that?
And then he, like, gets frozen in carbonite for, like, many, many years and then wakes up, and why is everything neon? And and is he a replicant?
Because it did take place a long time ago.
Yeah.
In a galaxy far, far away.
See, there you go.
You know what I really liked about this film? You know what it really felt like to me? Is playing Star Wars tabletop. Because we were,
really?
It felt like someone... Like when we play the Star Wars tabletop games,
yeah,
like you create the story and you make your own characters and they're in the world, but they're not attached to the main
right
people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you can choose to like whenever possible, if you've got a good a story runner going, to kind of, you know, kind of tag it to certain aspects of the canon. But yeah, it's your own story. And this kind of felt like their own story and we got to be a part of it.
I love fan fiction.
Whoa.
And I love it to death, and I'm so glad that fan fiction is allowed to come to the forefront these days.
I really got to bring up this question.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Empire Strikes Back is known as probably the finest Star Wars movie ever made. How do you guys feel that Rogue One stacked up against it?
Oh, so we're doing the countdown for reals now.
I got to be honest with you. I'm seeing it through rose-colored glasses right now. I need to see it a couple more times.
Yeah, it's been a while
to give you an honest answer. Because right now, I'll say this movie... But I need to see it a few more times to really kind of to analyze. Because I've seen Empire Strikes Back probably 4,000, not 4,000, but like I've seen it upwards of like 70 times,
right.
I'm sure. Uh-huh. I wore holes in that VHS tape. It was on TV the night. I caught the end of it when I was trying to fall asleep at like 2 a.m.
Oh, okay.
Like it's just, I've seen it so much. And I don't think it would be fair for me to give a comparison right now, because I haven't seen this one enough.
Yes.
And so, I was the first one to be like, this is the best Star Wars movie
you
after Episode 7. And then today I was just like, even just like a month afterwards, like, Episode 7 was bullshit.
Yeah.
Like,
There's a drop off. There's a honeemoon period.
Yeah.
And then you drop off. Because like you walked out of that theater tonight, like someone, you know, just like took you around the world, jerked you off and hit that prostate.
And
too.
Then afterwards, they were just like, I married that.
Yeah. And
and
then
you're just like, why did I marry that? Why do I even give a shit about Kylo fucking Renter?
Exactly.
I don't even know what the fuck his name is.
Exactly. So I think we need repeat viewings. I think we need some time to kind of absorb. And
yep. I can see myself really enjoying this. Like, at long distance. This is a long-term relationship kind
That's
of thing.
Good.
I can see myself farting around Rogue One. You know, being able to poop in comfort and talk about taxes with Rogue One.
I believe you're right.
Apparently drunk dialed Rogue One. He came out of the theater.
Wanted to drunk dial it.
Oh God, this is such a great movie.
It's another great tie-in to Empire Strikes Back, because now you get an idea of why Luke Skywalker's why he called a squadron Rogue Group or Rogue Squadron.
Yeah.
Right.
In Episode 5.
In memoriam of their sacrifice.
Yeah. Jane Urso. Jin
and then
or so.
Jin, in the expanded universe, Rogue Squadron was known as the Rebel Alliances and the New Forces from your fighter squadron. But you know, I don't think they're going to go a similar route in the new expanded universe. I hope they do, because I love Rogue Squadron, the idea behind Rogue Squadron. But like, it definitely gives the name Rogue Group a very, very heavy and very, very.
And now we know what it's going to have to take to be a part of Rogue Group, because you're going to have to be.
You have to be willing to
die for the cause.
Sacrifice
yeah.
it
right.
all.
It's Rogue Squadron.
How sad were you guys that Diego Luna wasn't Kyle Katarn, though?
I didn't care, dude. Because
you were just saying you wanted these new stories,
know,
right?
But
you were
like,
just saying that. Now you want me Kyle Katarn.
I also want Kyle.
Do you want a Kyle Katarn movie? We can.
I can have my goddamn cake and eat it too. I can have my Jin Erso and.
Eat her too.
I would, you know, but that's a different story. That's a different cast.
That's a different cast.
Funnel of Love. I feel like you could have your cake and eat it too.
Nobody
fucking knows who Kyle Katarn is. Nobody outside of us. She doesn't know who Kyle Katarn is.
Know.
Exactly.
Okay. You know what? Go. That would make an entertaining movie, though. I would love a Kyle Katarn movie, but like, I don't think. Like, would they break from the way he was portrayed in the way he's already been portrayed, or would they just kind of do something the same?
I would love to. Again, I was like,
well, they have Thrawn.
I would be down with fucking like Mexican Kyle Katarn.
They brought Thrawn
so cool.
into Rebels.
Yeah.
And like the guy who plays Jyn Erso's father, Galen, his brother does
Mads Mikkelsen.
Voice.
Wait, Mads Mikkelsen's brother does Kyle Katarn?
Does
Thrawn's
voice?
Yeah. We brought that up a couple times.
And that's right. Yeah.
The,
there were a lot of people from Sherlock in this movie, by the way.
Well, it's not a stretch that they can like bring in Star Wars characters from the expanded universe, because I definitely wouldn't mind seeing Kyle Katarn again. But like, one of my favorite expanded universe characters was Corran Horn. He was from Corellia. He's like a cop in the
That's a place I want to see in the movie. Yeah. Corellia. Corellia needs to get shown the fuck up now.
What if we had like what if we had like a Corellian cop story, crime drama?
Well, they could definitely do that. But like, you know, what I liked about Corran was like he was supposedly the children of he was a child of a Jedi. His grandfather was a Jedi in the Clone Wars, but like that was in the old EU, and that I would like to see that concept being brought back, and like, you know, they could do a film that I think would be personally interesting, is someone who combines his abilities as a Jedi as not just an ambassador, but definitely someone who enforces justice,
or a detective,
or something like that.
What about a detective story? Would you be into that?
I don't know, like, you know, because Star Wars stories to me, they have to be epic, and Rogue One was epic. I don't know what they're going to do with Han Solo, but you know, these standalone stories can be
have the potential. Though.
Yeah,
they
can do whatever they want. But
was
like, you know,
Kyle Katarn Corellian?
Yeah,
yeah. Human. Maybe I want to see Kyle Katarn.
Was he Corellian?
Yeah, I'm sure he was.
Or doing Corellia stuff.
No,
if you're a badass and you're a dude and you're a human, you're probably Corellian.
Or guys, like, got a little Corellian in you.
Old Star Wars logic here.
Or Coruscant. I don't know, but the
do we want to see like the Star Wars Underground video game that got shelved? Level 69.
One that was supposed to take place on Coruscant, like on the
like
CD
the sub levels of Coruscant.
The CD underbelly of the city.
I would love to see a fucking Star
that'd
Wars
be a
noir.
Good, that'd be a good place for a Star Wars, yeah, of a detective.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
I don't know about... Well,
is that enough for you? Or is it like, could you stomach a small, personal Star Wars film?
I think I could, but I don't see what... I don't see how that would look, especially the... Because we see smaller scale stories in the animated in the CGI animated series that are mm-hmm. done very well, but they contribute to a larger scale.
Well, look at Disney's already done it. Right. Just Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Marvel properties, smaller scale as opposed to the movies. Very character centric to one or two characters.
The problem is when you're working with a juggernaut like Star Wars, like I don't see them wanting to take the risk of, oh, let's make a small Star Wars movie.
And you also run the risk of making too many of those movies and doing too much of a good thing.
Let's look at Marvel. I mean, granted, Marvel has a lot more real estate for people to like play, like in much bigger sandbox for people to play in.
Yeah.
We got. I would argue it's you. Just have you also have just as big of a sandbox for Star Wars.
You've got a huge universe. There's a lot of room to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but it would still have the Star Wars name on it. Whereas Jessica Jones, people don't immediately think Marvel. You know.
Okay.
That's
well. What if they created a character and then just called that and then it didn't attach the Star Wars? Didn't say like, you know, the Star Rogue One, a Star Wars story or Star Wars episode. This, it was just like, you know.
Instead of just Marvel, it says Star Wars.
Yeah, right. And it's just that, just like it's a. Here we go. It's a Corellian, ex-Corellian police force guy who's a private dick on Coruscant now,
and his name is Horn.
Yeah,
Dick Horn, private Dick Horn.
There you go.
Really?
Come on, it was low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, I know. I'm disappointed in you.
How fucking dare you?
It's the nerd. It's the way we do a nerd funnel. Well, nerd funnelers, what do you guys think about the movie? What do you want to talk about as far as the characters, the ships, the track of the plot? We invite you all to give us feedback at
hit us up on nerdfunnel.com, facebook.com/nerdfunnel, youtube.com/nerdfunnel, Instagram, where you can see apparently my bouffant.
Yes,
tonight. I think we're going to be posting that tonight.
Yes.
or some shit like that.
You're the auctioneer. You got the voice for it, man. I can't do it that quick. That was good.
And how about I'm gonna show me your dits and give me your ass and blah 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 blah.
Wait, what was that second one?
Just let it happen.
Until next time, may the force be with you, nerd funnelers.
Dick more horns.